My name is Steven Pacheco, and I'm the host of Trace Evidence, a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and missing persons. Today, we're celebrating the launch of Murderly, a new podcast network populated by some of the most talented hosts and intriguing podcasts available today. I'm thrilled to be a part of Murderly, and I wanted to give you a taste of Trace Evidence by examining one of the most bizarre unsolved murder cases I've ever covered, the mysterious death of Chuck Morgan. Chuck Morgan was a family man who married the love of his life, Ruth, and became the father to four beautiful daughters. A kind and generous man, he led a fairly typical life, working for an escrow company and spending his free time relaxing with his family and dreaming of a quiet and calm retirement. In early 1977, everything would change, and Chuck would become wrapped up in a world of criminal activity, undercover work, government agencies, and organized crime. Chuck would disappear, only to return later, the victim of an alleged abduction. His story spoke of violent torture and threats, though he refused to name names. In the aftermath, his paranoia accelerated, and he began carrying a gun and wearing a bulletproof vest, which would make his death all the more suspicious. In June of 1977, after being missing for 11 days, Chuck's body was found in a remote desert area outside of Tucson. He'd been shot once in the back of the head. The sheriff's department suggested suicide. The medical examiner disagreed, and the details of what was found at the scene have baffled investigators for the past 40 years. Was Chuck Morgan the victim of a complex plot involving racketeers, government agents, and assassins? Or was it all an illusion created by a troubled man spiraling into an undiagnosed mental illness? This is Trace Evidence, the mysterious death of Chuck Morgan. On March 22nd, 1977, Charles Chuck Morgan left for work as he always did. He kissed Ruth goodbye and shuffled out the front door for another day of pushing paper and balancing accounts. When dinner time came around, Ruth prepared a meal for the girls and Chuck, but as the hours began passing, Chuck failed to return home. He'd been late before, but he usually called. Assuming that he just got caught up in something, Ruth didn't think too much of it, but she'd later begin to panic. When day began turning into night, and Ruth was putting the girls to sleep, she knew something was wrong. She called around, but no one seemed to know where Chuck was. Ruth called the police to report her husband missing. Unfortunately, 1977 was a very different time, and the cases of missing adults were not taken as seriously as they are now. She was told that her husband was a grown man, and he could go where he wanted to, but if she hadn't heard from him in 48 hours, they'd take a report. Frustrated and lost, Ruth did what she had to do to keep it together for the girls. She decided she was going to the police department the next day, and she wouldn't be leaving until they took that report. Chuck wasn't the type to just run off, and he loved their daughters more than anything. She laid down to go to sleep, but was awakened at approximately 2 a.m. by the sound of a loud thump at the back door. Ruth was shocked to find Chuck at the back door, missing a shoe, with one plastic handcuff around one ankle and a set still bound around his wrists. She quickly pulled him inside, asking him what had happened, and he gestured to his throat, suggesting that he couldn't speak. She handed him a pen and paper, and Chuck wrote a bizarre tale. According to Chuck, he'd been abducted, and his throat had been coated with a hallucinogen that, if not taken care of, could drive him insane or even shut down his central nervous system. When Ruth went to call the police, Chuck wrote down that he was told if they called the police or a doctor, Chuck and his entire family would be in danger. Despite her better judgment, Ruth turned away from the phone and took Chuck into their bedroom. Over the course of the next week, Ruth took care of Chuck and nursed him back to health. At one point, Chuck wrote down that his treasury identification was missing, and when asked about it, he made only minor suggestions that he had been working undercover for the Treasury Department in regard to illegal money laundering schemes going on in the area at that time. When Chuck recovered and regained his voice, he never talked about the topic again. When Ruth asked questions, he simply wouldn't answer them. But it became clear early on that Chuck's paranoia was beginning to rise. He became overly protective of the family, restricting their comings and goings, wanting frequent phone calls, and he decided that only he would be the one to drive their daughters to school and to pick them up each day. In addition to that, before Chuck put on his shirt and tie every day, he suited his body with a bulletproof vest and began carrying a .357 Magnum handgun. Several months later, in June, Chuck paid a visit to his father and told him about a letter that he'd written, which would detail exactly what was going on were something to happen to him. Strangely, when he left his father's home that day, Chuck vanished once again. While Ruth was worried, she remembered Chuck's warning about contacting the police, and so all she could do was wait. 9 long days would pass, and Ruth would receive a disturbing phone call on the 9th day from a woman who has never been identified. According to Ruth, the woman asked for her by name and then said, "Chuck is all right." She ended the call by saying, "Ecclesiastes 12, 1 through 8, and then she hung up. Not knowing what to do, Ruth looked through her Bible and turned to Ecclesiastes and read sections 1 through 8 of chapter 12, but there was little there that clued her in to what was going on. Upset and confused, Ruth was at a loss for what this could possibly mean, but she felt uplifted having been told that Chuck was all right. Sadly, this uplifting moment would be short-lived, as 2 days later, Chuck's body would be discovered. 40 miles outside of Tucson, in a deserted area, Chuck was found lying next to his car. He'd been shot once in the back of the head. His .357 Magnum was found next to his body. Police ultimately determined that Chuck's cause of death was suicide, but there were details about the crime scene that didn't fit that scenario. Gunshot residue testing found that Chuck's left hand had recently fired a gun, despite the fact that he was right-handed. Other details of items found at the scene would add to the confusion. These items included one of Chuck's own teeth found wrapped in a handkerchief in his car. Multiple weapons, ammunition, and CB radios were also found in the vehicle. In what can only be considered a bizarre twist, a $2 bill was found inside the waistband of Chuck's underwear. The word Ecclesiastes and a number 12 were written on the bill. There were also arrows drawn in, pointing to the numbers 1 and 8 on the bill's serial number. There were 7 Spanish names written on the bill, starting with the letter A and running alphabetically to the letter G. On the back of the bill, which depicts the signing of the Declaration of Independence, the individuals pictured were labeled with numbers 1 through 7. Despite these strange details, the Pima County Sheriff's Department decided it was suicide. The county medical examiner disagreed, declaring Chuck's death to be of an unknown cause. Several days later, authorities received a phone call from an anonymous woman, apparently the same one who had called Ruth. This time, she referred to herself as Green Eyes, and she claimed to have spent time with Chuck in the days before his death. She told a strange story about Chuck having a briefcase with $60,000 in it, and that he was planning to buy himself out of a contract that an assassin had taken to end his life. 2 weeks after Chuck's death, two men visited Ruth at home. They identified themselves as FBI agents and were granted permission to search the home, claiming that they were working a case in relation to Chuck's death. The two men tore the home apart, never stating what they were looking for, and then left. When Ruth called the FBI to follow up, she was told no agents were sent to her home and they were in no way involved in an investigation related to Chuck's death. For the next 13 years, the questions revolving around Chuck's death would remain unanswered, and the police would continue to state that they believed it to have been suicide. Then, in February of 1990, a local reporter named Don Devereaux would dig into the case, and he would find what he believed to be connections that suggested that not only was organized crime involved in Chuck's death, but possibly government agents and even the CIA. Several months after making these statements and investigating Chuck's death, a man named Doug Johnston was killed, execution style, when he was shot once behind his left ear. This murder took place in the parking lot across from Devereaux's home. When Devereaux began to look into the murder, he discovered that Johnston drove the same style and color of vehicle as he did. At the time, their addresses were only one digit apart. Devereaux was later told that a hit had been taken out on him, and that Johnston's death may have been a result of mistaken identity. Devereaux believes to this day that there is a connection between the murder of Johnston and the death of Chuck Morgan. The mystery surrounding Chuck Morgan's death is absolutely baffling, and in the years since, several theories have risen to the surface. One theory agrees with the Pima County Sheriff's Department and suggests that Chuck had either been using illicit drugs or had suffered from some form of mental illness, which resulted in hallucinations, paranoia, and ultimately, death by suicide. Another theory believes that Chuck had been conducting illegal activities for members of an organized crime family, and that he'd either become a threat to them or had been attempting to scam them, and this resulted in his abduction and later on, his murder by a contract killer. Another theory alleges that Chuck may have been working as an undercover agent for the United States Treasury Department after having been recruited to assist with a sting operation regarding money laundering and land grab schemes involving organized crime and possibly government agents. His death is believed, in this line of thought, to have come after it was discovered that he was working with authorities. Chuck's family had no choice but to go on with their lives, though they never believed the stories about their father having killed himself. In 2006, sadly, Ruth lost a long battle with cancer and passed away, having never learned the truth. Chuck's daughters maintained that their father was murdered, and when his daughter Megan was asked about his death, she later stated, "My father had a lot of information about people here in Tucson that could have been very detrimental. There was a lot of information about politicians, people who are still active and that work in the government today. He had that information, and they wanted to silence him." The death of Chuck Morgan is an incredibly bizarre and disturbing story, with a lot of details and fascinating theories. This was only a surface-level summary of the case, and if you'd like to hear the full story with in-depth detail and a thorough examination of the theories, make sure to check out my podcast, Trace Evidence, as I'll be releasing the full feature-length episode this week. I want to thank Murderly and all of the other podcasts associated with the network for their support, kindness, and incredible work ethic. I believe we're at the beginning of what's going to be a great place for podcasters to join together in a tight-knit community of supportive and driven contemporaries. For more information about Murderly, visit murder.ly and make sure to check out all of the amazing podcasts you can find there. If you're looking for more information about Trace Evidence, visit trace-evidence.com for full episodes, transcripts, videos, and all of my social media accounts. Like, subscribe, and rate, and I'll see you next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence, now a part of the Murderly family.